Okay.
Carry on.
Where were we?
Boobies.
Here, here. Here, here. Order, order. Order, I say order. Here, here. This Constitutional Congress is called to order. I say unto my brothers, shall we begin? Start. Or shall I say verily unto you? Let's get this party started. Let's see. Our goals of this Constitution, I say, shall be to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for a common defense, blah, 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 blah.
Jefferson, I do think, dear sir, in order to ensure domestic tranquility, we must somehow keep our little women from the vote. I do believe my little woman constantly hops on me and gives me orders. Verily, we must protect the country from the vagaries of the female mind. To that goal, I say, no vote for her. We must wait until the female evolves to be our equal before we can entrust them with the vote. Wouldn't you agree?
What about the women with big boobies?
Ah, yes. Well, the women with big boobies have much power over us. In that regard, they don't need a vote to get what they want, wouldn't you say?
Excellent observation, Samuel. I hear you speak with great experience in this area. What else concerns us?
Well, what really troubles me, sir, is the potential of someone rewriting lyrics over the future national anthem. A nation with no anthem is a nation with no soul. They could, for example, substitute words like asshole for freedom. I say this flies in the very face of a more perfect union, sir. Oh, and I say that verily.
Yes, that is a good one. We shall proscribe the flouting of symbology of our nation by banning lyrics rewriting in general, sir. Yes, Samuel, your hand is raised.
What shall we do about the right to live?
What the hell do you speak of, sir? Right? Life? Duh. We're living, aren't we?
Yes, but shall the state have the right to make decisions for a family regarding the creation and cessation of life?
I call for obfuscation in this matter. Let our offspring ponder that problem. We have ails to get to in short order. We can't be here forever.
What say, my dear brothers, about the rampant flag burning? This is causing great problems to our fledgling nation.
What about the British flag?
Well, of course, the burning of the British flag would be allowed. That is much fun, sir. We all enjoy that, and we think about it every single day. Every single day, though it's hard work.
Okay. Let's take a few seconds for interpretive dance, shall we? Okay, back to order. What shall we do about this marijuana?
Marijuana? Whatever she says of me isn't true. I'm a married man. But I do enjoy a bit of marijuana every now and then. I say allow it.
That we will do, good sir. That we will do. Now we come to a very thorny issue. How do we ensure separation of church and state?
Oh, my dear Jefferson, surely you jest. You put the church on one side of the street and the state on the other. My goodness, Jefferson, why are you making this so complicated? Let us insert a clause to require a 100-yard minimum distance between them. That separation should be sufficient.
Good sir, that's not what I meant. We don't want the church to interfere with the business of the state and vice versa.
Oh, that will never happen. That's what happened in England. Our progeny will never permit that egregious offense. Do you think we have to spell it all out? It's not like we have time to think of everything I say. The future Americans can figure this out when they have nothing better to do, for God's sake.
That comment there, dear sir, doesn't it violate separation of church and state? We're the embodiment of the state now, and you just invoke the deity's name.
Well, whatever, Jefferson. Now what about bangers?
Bangers? I'm not sure what you mean.
Sausages, my dear sir. I'm getting hungry and this is dragging on. I say let's just write the damn thing and move on. All in favor?
Hear, hear!
Nay.
Nay.
Please stand by.
The weekend of July 2nd, 2005. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Pat.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Pat, show number 20.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Fine.
Number 20, baby.
Number 20.
Number 20 with 80 more till we reach the big 100. We've got a big celebration planned for our 100th show.
Yay, we do.
It's already in the works. It's exciting. I don't want to give anything away, but it does involve French Riviera.
Ooh.
And it does involve
champagne.
And it does involve
internet porn.
Internet porn. Boy, you've got it. And Brad Pitt.
Woohoo!
So we're really looking forward to that. Make your plans now.
Make your plans now because you've got to be ready for this.
Yes. Well, happy July 4th, everybody, and happy July 4th to you, Patty.
Thank you, Jeff.
We've had some fireworks in the studio between us.
Yeah, baby. Well, I got some comments about what's happened today in history on the 4th of July.
What has happened today in history?
What happened on 1776, July 4th?
Just another day, I'll bet.
The Continental Congress approves a Declaration of Independence.
Well, that's a good one for the kids.
In 1802, the U.S. Military Academy at West Point opens.
Well, how about that?
In 1803, the Louisiana Purchase is announced. We got over 529 million acres from France for $15 million. If you adjust that for inflation for 2005, it was $193 million.
Wow, we should have bought two.
And also, on this day, in 1872, Calvin Coolidge, who became our 30th president, was born.
Wow.
There's more.
There can't be more than that.
There's more.
You just hit the peak with Calvin.
On July 4th, 1826, John Adams, the second president of the United States of America, died. And so did...
At the same time.
Thomas Jefferson. And in 1831,
wow.
James Monroe, the fifth president of the United States of America, died.
Wow.
And...
You think they did that intentionally? Like, gee, I think I'm going to go on the fifth, but I'll just expedite it.
And in 2003, Barry White died.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. And I don't know if that's exciting. Is Barry White dying exciting? Wow, that's incredible. I want to get back to the Calvin Coolidge, though. That's the most remarkable thing about the whole thing, don't you think?
No.
Calvin still has a lot of legacy on us today. I personally think of Calvin Coolidge every single day. Don't you? I mean, come on, you gotta admit you do.
Right. Actually,
you love him.
It's also the beginning of the month, and don't we normally tell our listeners what they need to be concerned about at the beginning of the month?
Yes, we do, Pat. Actually, we do. It's July, and you know what July means? It means a lot of things. And first of all, it's National Ice Cream Month.
Oh, yeah.
And I have one comment about that. Pat, the ice cream bar. What do you think about the ice cream bar?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, but I like Haagen-Dazs ice cream bars.
I love
those cookie sandwich bars.
I love ice cream sandwiches. I hate the ice cream bar. To me, the ice cream bar is the... I love ice cream, okay? So, but ice cream bars are the stupidest thing in the world. They have this flaky chocolate around it. There's no possible way to eat an ice cream bar without getting mess all over the place. You can't eat it with your hands because then your hands are full of melted chocolate. And you know what? My opinion is, I'm not a big chocolate fan. You don't need the extra chocolate that ruins perfectly good ice cream.
Oh, Jeff. Well, you know, what you're complaining about is the mechanics. Why don't you just...
It's a horrible mechanical system.
Have you had a Häagen-Dazs one where there's a stick and they dip it in chocolate and roll it in nuts and you don't like those?
No, because when you still eat it, the chocolate falls all over the freaking place, all over the sofa or wherever you are. It's a stupid delivery device.
Do you like spaghetti?
Yes.
It's hard to eat.
True. But I'm just saying...
And you're still eating it.
There's so many... There's been so many ways of successfully delivering ice cream. The ice cream bar is a massive failure, in my opinion. And yet, people buy them. They're all over the place.
The delivery system needs to be improved.
I think
point
it needs
well
some,
taken.
I think it needs some tweaking. All right. It's also National Picnic Month.
Hmm.
It's National Doghouse Repair Month. Have you repaired your doghouse, Pat?
My whole house is a doghouse.
I can attest to that.
I need to repair a bunch of things at my house. I live on clay soil, so my foundation slips or shifts, and I got cracks in my house like you wouldn't believe.
You got cracks in your ass, too. Sorry. I don't know where that came from. And it's National Foreign Language Month.
Mm.
And my favorite, National Hot Dog Month.
My God, and I didn't know that.
Yes, and I'm going to tell you some things about the hot dog. It's first of all put out by the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council. And I don't know if you've renewed your membership, Pat, but I'm an active member of the Hot Dog and Sausage Council. There are 7 billion hot dogs eaten between Memorial Day and Labor Day, and the biggest weekend for hot dogs?
4th of July?
You got it, 4th of July.
I'm wondering, Jeff, as soon as the sleeping giant China wakes up, do you think that the number of hot dogs consumed will increase?
I think, you know, they might. Actually, I think this is a U.S.-only statistic, though. How many hot dogs, Pat, does the average American eat every year?
Let me see. I'm going to try and guess. I'm going to say 30.
Actually, not a bad guess. 60.
Oh, that was a bad guess. 60.
Well, you got a multiple, I guess.
Wow, I don't eat three. I don't eat... What, how many?
That's
would that be
six,
five?
Six per... No,
five.
Six, yeah, five per what?
Month.
Five per month, yeah.
I don't eat five a month.
No, I don't eat five per month either.
Wow, I don't...
I'm going to give you the history of
the
hot dog.
Hey, you know what? People who just have sex once a week eat more hot dogs than they have sex.
That's true. And the hot dog is kind of a phallic thing. So what does it mean? It means something, but we're not smart enough to figure out what it means. The term hot dog is credited to sports cartoonist Tad Dorgan. Thanks, Tad. At a 1901 baseball game at the Polo Grounds in New York. Vendors began, this is actually interesting, vendors began selling hot dashened sausages and rolls.
Oh.
From the press box, Dorgan could hear the vendors yelling, "Get your dashin' sausage while they're red hot." So he sketched a cartoon depicting this, but wasn't sure how to spell dashin'. So he just called them simply hot dogs.
Oh.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, there is a new like chili lime hot dog at 7-Eleven where I live.
Yum.
Chili lime.
You know who's got good hot dogs?
Who?
Costco.
Oh, yes. Susan and I've
cheap.
Gone there.
And they're cheap and they're really yummy. Well, you know what's in a hot dog?
I don't think I do want to know. I might not eat them afterwards. Well, are there gross things in it?
The National Hot Dog and Sausage Council actually doesn't like this question, and they simply respond by saying it's specially selected meat trimmings.
They don't say, hot dogs is humans.
It's you. What was that quote from the...
Soylent Green.
Soylent Green. It's humans. Soylent Green is human. It's people. No, it's people. Okay, I got some questions for you. For adults, Pat, what is the number one hot dog condiment?
Mustard.
Bing. Very good. For children, what's the number one hot dog condiment?
Ketchup.
You are good. Now, that is true in general, but it does vary by region. New York, for example, likes to use a lighter mustard and steamed onions. Actually, that sounds great. Mm. Chicago is where I grew up, and I can attest to this, uses mustard, relish, onions, tomato slices, and pretty
Holy
much anything
guacamole.
At all. Yeah. So, kids were also asked what condiment they would use if their moms weren't watching.
Chocolate.
You're good, man. She
I
really knows
that?
Her dog. She really knows her dog. Here's
no,
one.
No, I really know my children.
Here's one last bit of advice on the hot dog, and I'm sure many of you have been writing in about this. Always dress the dog and not the bun.
Oh.
The council also recommends the following order for condiment application.
And this is important.
This is important stuff. First, you want to go wet. So you want to do your mustards and your ketchups. Then you want to go with your chunky. So that would be your relishes and your onions and things like that. And then close with any kind of spices that you want to put on it.
Uh-huh.
Now, one more little fact in my research I found, Pat. A lot of different kids like hot dogs. Some are big kids. Some are little kids. And actually, kids who climb on
fat kids?
Kids who climb on rocks like them. Yeah, it's funny you mention it, because fat kids and skinny kids do like hot dogs. And you know what?
I get it now.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Very funny.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kinds of kids eat Armor hot dogs?
Fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on rocks. Kids, kids.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Armor hot dogs. The dogs kids love to bite.
Picking it up on the old banjo, put on the mustard and away we go.
Jeff, this morning I was walking the dogs.
The dogs.
Listening to Morning Edition
the
Sunday.
Hot dogs?
Today's actual show, and they had this political trivia question, and they had some bonus questions.
I say!
So I wanted to ask you a few of the bonus questions just to see if you knew them.
Oh, God, okay. Just to expose to the audience how much I suck at American history.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Where and when did the Congress meet for the first time?
I would have to say Philadelphia?
No.
Dang.
They met at New York's Federal Hall on March 4th, 1789.
Who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have thunk it? Who was the longest-serving Speaker of the House?
Oh, I want to say Williams Jennings Bryant. I don't know.
Sam Rayburn, Democrat of Texas, served three different stints as Speaker of the House for a total of 17 years.
Well, Sam Rayburn, I'm here from Texas. My name's Sam.
Okay, now we've already gone through this, but I still, want to do it. Name the three presidents who died on Independence Day. Bonus, which one died first?
Well, there was John Adams, there was Thomas Jefferson, and there was the other guy you mentioned.
James Monroe.
James Monroe. The guy who died first was James Monroe.
Though Adams' last words were, "Jefferson still lives," he could not have known that his friend and sometime rival had gone to his reward hours earlier. So it was Jefferson.
Oh my.
Okay, who gave the first presidential news conference filmed for TV and newsreels?
For TV, I guess I would have to go with JFK.
No, earlier.
Dang.
Dwight D. Eisenhower.
That makes sense.
January 19th, 1955.
Of course, because when they were debating for the whole campaign, they were on TV. Duh.
He held a news conference at the State Department.
Okay.
They were talking about China and national security.
Oh.
Who was the first president to have a telephone on his desk?
Telephone must have been... Calvin Coolidge.
Herbert Hoover. He had it installed on March 27th, 1929.
Well, that's very interesting.
Okay. This one, I just kept this question because I think it's funny. The last word is funny. In the Iran-Contra affair during the Reagan administration, who said he would be the fall guy but never the patsy?
Oliver North?
Yes. The man convicted of obstructing Congress, destroying documents, and accepting an illegal gratuity, namely a security fence, was Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. The convictions were overturned on appeal, and the charges were not pursued.
And it's funny, in the 20 years since, he's known as nickname Patsy. So
he was wrong.
He was wrong. Hey, Patsy, if you're listening, how you doing there?
All righty.
It is only a paper moon hanging over a cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me. It is only a canvas sky sailing over a muslin tree, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me. Without your love,
It's time for the genre of the week, Pat.
Oh, what is it?
Today's genre is space rock.
Space rock.
Space rock is a...
And I want to be a rocket man.
Rocket man. I kind of like that, but not really. The term space rock was originally coined back in the 70s to describe the cosmic flights of bands. Cosmic flights? Wow. I think that means drugs. Cosmic flights of bands like Pink Floyd and Hawkwind. Today, however, space rock refers to a new generation of alternative indie bands that draw from psychedelic rock, ambient music, and more often than not, experimental and avant-garde influences. Space rock is almost always slow, hypnotic, and otherworldly.
Hypnotic.
It typically favors lengthy, mind-blowing sonic explorations over conventional song structures and vocals. Sometimes,
mind-blowing?
Oops. Vocals sometimes play second fiddle to the shimmering instrumental textures. Now, some space rock groups are explicitly drug-inspired, which makes sense, given the typically narcotic effect of the style's foundation. A lot of washed reverb guitars, minimal drumming, and gentle languid vocals. So, I'm going to play a few examples. This first one is from 1987.
Let me ask you a question first. Had you heard this genre before?
Yeah. Not much, but I've heard of it.
Just in your description of it, I don't think I'm going to like it. I don't know
probably
why.
Probably not, but you know, and you have to hear, I've got four songs, the last one I really like.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Okay, first one is called Spaceman 3, a song called Call the Doctor from 1987.
Cause when the Lord rises evening, I don't think they'll wait and rain.
Okay, next.
You like it?
No.
It sounds kind of like Pink Floyd a little bit. Okay, the next one is going to be Flying Saucer Attack. Flying Saucer Attack called Always. From 1995.
Okay, I've had enough of that.
Pat, you remind me of Vox Monitor when they review podcasts.
I've had enough of that.
I have to let it sink in. The next one is The Verve, called Blue. This is from 1993.
I find this torturous.
I like it.
Boy. Make it stop. Make it stop.
Okay, the last one is The Doves. This is from year 2000. This is my favorite.
Full.
So, thumbs up from Jeff on Space Rock, thumbs down from Pat, and that is your genre of the week.
Where's your identity?
Our name is stereotyping the name. I got to get the shit straight. Your vision of stupidity is made of vanity. Keep your quality up in the sky. There's a hole on Broadway. No control.
Well, Pat, I saw I'm not a big TV watcher, but I saw a new TV show that I think I read an article about it and I thought I'd try it out. Have you heard of Morgan Spurlock? I don't know if you saw
it. Yes, yeah. I have. He's the guy who did Supersize Me.
Exactly. Now, did you ever see that?
Yes, I did. It was good.
Awesome. So he's got this new show called 30 Days. It's on the FX network. I think it's the FX network. And it's on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. I saw it this week and I'm TiVoing it for the future. It's pretty good.
What's it about?
It's kind of a reality show thing, but he takes one person from a different world and places him
in a McDonald's?
Maybe McDonald's world to a Wendy's world. But places him in another world for 30 days. And he's supposed to sort of inundate himself with that new culture. And, you know, it's kind of about that. So the one I saw was this very Christian guy. He moved to Michigan in this town that's heavily Muslim. And he had to live with Muslims, pray with Muslims, learn all that he could about it. And there's really interesting observations. I mean, he came in thinking Muslims were terrorists and bad and violent and came out thinking, you know, it's just another form of praying to the same God. So it's kind of interesting. Next week's is going to be a 24-year-old conservative heterosexual man travels to San Francisco and immerses himself in the gay scene.
Ah, well, I wonder if he'll be doing P&P, if you know what I mean.
I know. You know, it's these things are cheesy, but Spurlock is good. So you know, I think that's what gives it a little bit of appeal to me.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Wife Swap.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, they have people that they typically do the same thing. I think they took, in one of the many I've watched, they took this Christian family and paired them up with a lesbian couple.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It was kind of interesting. At the end, the Christian woman was saying mean things to the lesbian couple.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought that she was very judgmental. It was sort of disappointing. I didn't expect her to be that way.
Wow.
But anyway, that's what it sounds like. I would like to watch that show, except I don't have cable TV.
Oh, you need to step up. Well, I also rented this weekend Open Water, which is a very cool movie.
Is that the one where the couple's bobbing around in water for hours?
Yes, and I saw the making of it also. This guy, just like we do with podcasts, he did it on his weekends and did it, took vacations, and that's all he did to make this movie, totally independent.
Was the movie good?
It was excellent.
Really?
Yep. I also saw March of the Penguins, which I would recommend to anybody. It's a documentary about the penguins and how they sort of their life cycle over a year. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. And we saw War of the Worlds.
Wow.
And what a movie, huh?
I think you liked it a lot, didn't you?
All throughout the movie, I was sitting next to Pat, and I kind of peppered her with, like, oh, my God, I can't believe they said that. I can't believe they wrote it that way.
It was very bad.
It was awful, and I don't understand. Well, go ahead.
The dialogue was bad, I guess. I mean, you know, there were some fabulous special effects and all that good stuff, but it was truly an action movie. Now, I was willing to go to this action movie. I don't normally like action movies because some of the reviews I had read said it was really good, so I had very high expectations for the movie, and it fell below those expectations. I would have been much better off thinking it was a crappy, boring action movie, that there were going to be long sequences of the same old crap, and once they got out of one peril, and they got into another peril, and blah-bitty, blah-bitty, blah. And that's exactly what it was, except I just thought it was going to be better. I was bored.
Well, Spielberg, Tom Cruise, big summer blockbuster, and I guess it's bad on our part, but we have high expectations. But what gets me, and what just confuses me about this industry, is I don't understand why you got Spielberg, you got all the money in the world to make a movie, they're going to make tons. Why not invest a little bit more time and effort in the writing? The writing was just really, really contrived and really bad.
It was amateuristic.
Amateurish.
It was uninteresting. It was trite. It looked like you and I could have written something better than that, and we are really crappy writers.
Without a doubt, we could have written better.
But, you know, you said that you would use Rotten Tomatoes as your guide. Yep. After the movie, I went home and looked up what Rotten Tomatoes said about it. More people liked it than
72% fresh. I was so disappointed. But I will have to say the reviewer that I correlate best with is Roger Ebert. And he gave it 2 stars, and he put it down for the same reasons that we all did as well. So Roger Ebert was straight on. But I have another favorite reviewer, James Berardinelli. And he gave it 3 stars, and I was very disappointed in that. And 72%.
But 3 out of 5, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like he loved it.
No, he gave it 3 out of 4.
Oh, okay.
And Ebert was 2 out of 4. But I was disappointed. 72% fresh. I told Susan, you know, when we were having coffee afterwards, I said, I'm going to go to Rotten Tomatoes and I'll bet this is, you know, 30% or so. The number refers to how many reviewers give it a thumbs up versus thumbs down. And 72%, which puts it in the top half at least. So
I think that she was actually trying to argue that with you last night, or the night we watched it. She was trying to say, no, I think this is what most people want, and you're just out of touch with that particular aspect. I think she must have been right.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think of, like, you know, another blockbuster like Minority Report with Tom Cruise, big summer blockbuster. That was very well written, you know, very interesting sci-fi and, you know, awesome movie. So it's not like the mass releases have to be horribly written movies, you know. Again, and this movie had a lot of problems, but a lot of those problems could have been fixed, in my opinion, with just a little bit of more attention on the writing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what confuses me.
I mean, because the other aspects of it were good. The science fiction aspects and all of the special effects were fabulous.
They were fabulous. I mean, there were some holes in the theory, but they tried to be true to the old book and so forth, like the tripods machines.
Mm-hmm.
No advanced society would build a machine based on three legs. It's unstable. So there's some silly things, but they're trying to be true to the historical novel, and that's fair.
The one part I just kind of rolled my eyes at. I rolled my eyes at a lot in many parts.
I did all the time.
Remember when they were in the basement and that one creature comes down with the eye and it's looking for him?
Well, that was a fun scene, though.
You thought it was fun?
Yeah. It's been done in movies before.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's been done way too many times.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I need something better than that. That was like boring. Yeah.
The two Spielbergen images that were just fantastic, in my opinion, was the train that went by all in fire. I thought that was a really nice effect and just sent a chill. And the bodies that flow down the river.
Oh, yeah.
I thought those were, when I saw them, I said Spielberg. That's Spielberg at his best.
Really? Why do you say that? I didn't. Wasn't imprinted on me.
The subtle imagery. So I think Spielberg has, I don't know, I think of the World War II, Schindler's List and so forth, and some of the subtle imagery that he uses.
Well, you know, I would say that maybe so about the train going by with all the flames coming out of it, but the people coming down the river, that wasn't subtle, Jeff.
It wasn't subtle, but the way he used it in the movie, I think, was subtle. Sort of a forewarning of, or...
Well, the minute you saw that, you knew this is big shit.
Yeah. And it's sort of the way he was using the little girl, because she's really the one that saw it first, and she was still kind of innocent at that point. Tom Cruise was spending a lot of time trying to blindfold her and keep her away from the bad, and that was kind of, you know, the awakening of the innocence. So maybe it wasn't subtle. Maybe you're right about that, but it was sort of a way of of mentioning the horrors without, you know, without what the rest of the movie was doing. Bad writing. Anyways,
go see it if you want to, but it's action all the way, and most people do like that, so I would guess most people are gonna like it.
Yeah, probably so. It's time for the Dallas Minute. Pat, what do you got for us today?
Well, last night after we finished listening to jazz on the green at the Nashville Sculpture Garden, we all went to a great restaurant called La Dunie. There's actually two of them in Dallas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's one on Oak Lawn. That's not the one we went to. And the other one is on McKinney. And we got there kind of late, but they still let us get in. And, you know, we got to order. And it was really good. Now, one of my favorite things at La Dunie, and La Dunie is a probably best described as a South American cuisine restaurant. One of my favorite things I didn't have last night, but nonetheless, it's still my favorite, is their cuatro leches cake.
Oh.
It's fabulous. I don't really like things that are ultra sweet, and this is ultra sweet, but it's just so yummy.
Oh, very, very good. And they really do seem to specialize in their desserts there.
Mm, they're beautiful to look at, and they're very, very yummy. And I had this sandwich. It was on popover bread, which I like popover, and I'd have to say I don't think the popover bread for a sandwich works. It's too a little bit gummy and hard to kind of form as a sandwich. But you can, you know, you can plow through it anyway. And the meat was really good inside. It was like this slow roasted pork with a lime-based flavor. It was very, very yummy.
Right.
Yes.
That sounds good.
It's a great place to go. It's usually very crowded, so you have to get there early. And if you don't get there early, you just have to realize you're going to have to wait.
Okay. Well, Pat, there's this place in Dallas, and it's July. It's hot, hotter than get up. And I've been trying to get you girls to go to Wet n' Wild.
Don't say it. Not Wet n' Wild.
But they don't want to get in their bathing suits and have everybody see them.
A flub.
And all I'm thinking is, you know, you have no flub. All I'm thinking of is, who cares what you look like? What's funner than being wet and wild? They have slides, they have jumps, they've got twisty things.
I know, it looks like fun. I really do want to go. I just have this phobia about being
so unclothed.
They've got waves, it goes up and down and up and down.
Alrighty, I'll go.
I like it.
I'll wear a wetsuit, so I'll just be all swathed up. No, my latex suit, my favorite latex suit that I used for, you know, fooling around, that's what I'll wear.
Ah, yes, I've seen that suit. So, Wet n' Wild, babies. If you're hot and if you're in Dallas, go to Wet n' Wild. We'll see you there. And don't look at Pat's flub.
Wait, you said I didn't have any, you liar.
I'm just kidding. Pat has no flub. And that's your Dallas Minute.
I have a 7-Eleven update. Something very important is happening this month.
Let me cue up the music.
7-Eleven. Seven Eleven. It's time for Pat's 7-Eleven update.
This month we celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Slurpee.
Wow!
And everybody can go to 7-Eleven on July 11th and get a free Slurpee in celebration of this momentous occasion.
You've got to be kidding me! A free Slurpee?
Yes, on 7-Eleven.
Woohoo!
While supplies last. Now, the way the Slurpee got born, so to speak, is there was some guy who had he had a hamburger joint, and he had a broken fountain machine, and this happened in like 1959.
Right.
So he ended up, the guy's name is Omar Nedlick, and this was in Kansas. So he instead served icy cold bottled soft drinks from his freezer when his fountain machine broke. And I think everybody really liked it, and he decided that he wanted to see if he could do something with it. So he met up with this guy from Dallas, believe it or not, named John E. Mitchell, and he wanted to – they were a special, like, machinery company, and he wanted them to create a machine for him. And so this guy, Mitchell, started working on it, and this so reminded me of my dad when I read this. He started using an automobile air conditioner to create this machine to freeze carbonated drinks. And he created one and spent from like 1960 to 1965 trying to get people to buy it and use it. And it wasn't really very successful. And then in 1965, some 7-Eleven manager was kind of scoping out a rival convenience store. And he saw one of these machines in there that I think must not have been being used or whatever, because they just weren't that popular.
Right.
And he said, I think this is going to make it. So he purchased some, and they set them up in 1967, which is kind of odd to me that they don't, count 1967 as the birth of the Slurpee. They count 1965. But, they set it up, and it was a huge success.
Well, I'll bet the size of the Slurpee has grown dramatically then and now.
Well,
we're a fat nation now.
The most Slurpees purchased in the world come from Winnipeg, Manitoba.
No, really?
And in the United States, Detroit.
Detroit, there you go. Detroit, king of Slurpee.
It is the beginning of the month, and we would appreciate, if you don't mind, if you think our show merits it, for you going to Podcast Alley and voting for us, and also at the Podcast Pickle, and showing that you like this show by saying, we dig these people.
Yes, please vote for us. We really would appreciate it. And vote for your favorite podcast out there as well. There's a bunch of good ones there, so spread around the love.
Love American Style.
And that's going to do the show, Pat. Love Podcasting Style. I really should have played that song. Maybe I will. I don't know what I'm going to do in post-edit. I never know what I'm going to do in post.
Well, when I go home today, I've got to start getting ready for my friend Kevin, who's going to stay with me. He used to work for me about 7 years ago. He left Dallas about 5 years ago, and now he's coming back to Dallas, and he's going to stay with me while he looks for a house. I'm so excited.
Oh, he's going to move to Dallas?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Did he take a job here, or just said, I'm sick of, he was in Denver, wasn't he?
Yes, he took a job here.
Oh, very nice. Good.
He's a party fun guy, so I can't wait for him to be here.
Good. Perfect. Well, as we're doing our little outro, I did want to make some thanks. Thanks to Ferg from Air Ferg. He was really helpful to me and to a bunch of others in sorting out some of this iTunes 4.9 stuff this week. Thanks to Mark in Detroit for some wonderful comments that he said. Scarborough dude. Appreciate emails from him. Brad from Anita Springs sent us an update. This Dash Rip Rock, one of the bands that I featured last week in the genre of the week, they've actually got a blog and a podcast. Charlie from Israelisms. Did I say that right? Israelisms.
Israelisms.
Great podcast. He sent us a nice note. JV from No One's Listening.
Sorry, that's the dog.
That's the dog. JV from No One's Listening at noonelistening.com sent us a very nice note. And we got a few others. But anyway, thanks a lot. We'd love the feedback and love to hear what you guys are thinking about our podcast. So give us a holler at our phone line, which is area code 206-202-TALK. That's 206-202-8255. Our website address and our blog is all in our online store. We make no money on it. We keep the prices of the merchandise cheap so you guys can get something if you want to. We love the coffee mug. We think that's what looks the best.
It's really nice looking.
It's really pretty cool. Anyway, all that is available at www.thisandthatpodcast.com.
And you can reach me, Pat, at pat@thisandthatpodcast.com.
And you can reach me, Jeff, at jeff@thisandthatpodcast.com. Or you can reach the both of us at jeffandpat@thisandthatpodcast.com.
You can reach my mixer at mixer@thisandthatpodcast.com.
All right.
You can reach the dog at doggydog.com. All right, we're out of here, folks. Have a great and safe July 4th.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Burn your flag before it's too late.
Burn! Burn!
Let's take a few seconds for interpretive dance, shall we?
Okay,
back to order.
I'm hungry.
You didn't bring over any food.
I'm hungry.
From the podcast, Zany Aguirre's, who we've met and like. Cool.
And they, why did you say that?
Huh?
Why did you just say that comment?
Because they're from the Zany Aguirre's, who we liked and met, and they're cool.
What's more fun than being wet and wild?